75 years, and it was continuing. George said that he could give the conclusion of the study in just 5 words, Barnaby said, which were, I asked, happiness is love, full stop. I laughed, and that was just from studying men. Dr. Valiant found that a person's happiness with his relationships at age 50 was a better predictor of health at age 80 than more obvious markers like cholesterol. The relationships didn't have to be all hearts and flowers and Hallmark cards. After all, any romance has arguments and difficulties. But the definition of a good relationship turned out to be one where you could count on another person to be there for you. Relationships beyond romantic ones were important, too. An ability to make friends, talk to people, and get others on your side all contributed to long-term happiness and luck. I went back and read some of the many papers and books Dr. Valiant had written about the study. He had concluded that many of the things we would usually consider as luck makers in life, social class, parental success, religion, don't make much difference. Above a certain level, intelligence doesn't enter into the equation, nor does political ideology. Though the most liberal men had the best sex lives, no explanation for why that would be. What really mattered was positive emotions. Dr. Valiant insisted that feelings like love, hope, and joy aren't just nice. They are essential for a lucky life and the survival of our species. We need to bring our positive emotions to conscious attention, and we must not disdain to study them with our science, he said. 7 decades of study said that if you want to feel lucky and live a good life, then get happy. Look for the positive, and don't be embarrassed to share it. When I talked about it more with Barnaby, he pointed out that the concept of our beliefs shaping our luck and destiny has deep spiritual and philosophical roots. Barnaby's career in philanthropy had given him the extraordinary opportunity to meet and travel with some important religious and social leaders, including Nelson Mandela, the Dalai Lama, Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Pastor Rick Warren, and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. What each of them told me in one way or another was that we all filter events through our own views. We have a template for how we perceive the world, and certain personal outlooks are going to yield more success than others, he said. We can make luck on both personal and global levels by changing our thinking, that template we have in our head. So, for example, 100 years ago, Mahatma Gandhi taught the value of countering oppression with nonviolent protest rather than violence. Gandhi believed that our outlooks and attitudes create the future that we make for ourselves and others. His belief was that your thoughts become your actions become your habits become your destiny, Barnaby said. So there's really a direct line from the beliefs you start with to the destiny you create for yourself. I nodded. It was nice to hear him quote Gandhi, since a few months earlier I had done a project with Mahatma Gandhi's grandson, Arun Gandhi. Now in his 80s, Arun is devoted to spreading the messages of love and hope that he learned from his grandfather when he lived with him on his ashram as a teenager. Arun believes what his grandfather told him then, that you needed to be the change you wish to see in the world. Whatever the circumstances you face, you make luck for yourself and others by living with hope and expectation. You choose the favorable future you want and then live as if it had already occurred. A positive attitude has many dimensions, and believing in your own good fortune doesn't mean that you have sunshine every day, but it does mean that you have a bigger perspective. Gandhi spent many of those days and weeks and years in jail, but he turned them to luck with the passion and conviction that he could shape a better future. Barnaby pointed out that people with a negative outlook sometimes prevent bad things from happening by being wary and suspicious. But avoiding bad luck isn't enough in this world anymore, he said. You need optimism to create good luck and find a hopeful way forward. Now that we were on the subject of creating a lucky destiny, Barnaby asked if I'd like to meet Deepak Chopra, the spiritualist and New Age guru whom he had recently gotten to know. Barnaby and I had talked about him earlier, and I was intrigued that Barnaby, the serious science guy, was so inspired by some of Chopra's ideas. Now Barnaby explained that Chopra's concept of a lucky life included discovering your own talents and giving yourself the freedom to find your own path. Chopra brought the new agey platitudes about karma down to earth by saying that if you try to bring happiness and success to others, you are setting the stage for luck to flow back to you. So on a rainy afternoon, Barnaby and I went to the downtown haven known as Deepak's home base. We waited in his cozy office, and Deepak arrived exactly on time, looking relaxed and surprisingly stylish in black pants and a black shirt with a red quilted Patagonia vest and red sneakers. His black eyeglasses were studded with rhinestones, and he had a silver bracelet on one arm and a red Fitbit on the other. He looked like the Elton John of gurus, but he was also perceptive and thoughtful and original. I liked him immediately. He was completely unruffled when we asked his view on what it meant in a grander sense to lead a lucky life. It's possible that when you're Deepak Chopra, what is the meaning of life is the kind of question you get asked every day. I think it's we who give meaning and purpose based on our current state of awareness, he said. As human beings, we create constructs that we call reality, but all we can really have is experience. To show what he meant, he pulled out his phone and found a video someone had sent him earlier in the day of a baby playing with a colorful spinning toy. The baby batted at the toy excitedly, not really understanding what it was, but filled with awe. "What is experience?" Deepak asked rhetorically. Then pointing to the video, he said, "This is experience. Joy, curiosity, wonder, timelessness, spontaneity, and playfulness. He has no sense of me and other, it is just awareness experiencing itself." Deepak told us that he was very interested in the idea of flow. Psychologists often use flow to describe what happens when artists or musicians or anyone else get so fully involved in a creative process that time disappears and they become one with their work. Deepak saw it in an even more expansive sense. When you are in the moment and spontaneous, and you have no regrets, no anticipation, no sense of a self separated from what you are doing. We've all had those moments when time flies by, and instead of thinking and worrying, we just feel content. Was that the basis for a lucky life? There is an aliveness to flow, and therefore a joy, Deepak said. Maybe that's ultimately what people are seeking, whether they try to find it through tantric sex or biofeedback or Rumi's poetry or virtual reality or invented reality. Or for some, watching money flow, Barnaby joked. Whatever approach you choose, if you can find joys in the moment, garner the feeling that what you are doing is exactly what you want to be doing, then perhaps you've found the ultimate luck of existence. Given the options, how do you personally get into a state of flow? I asked Deepak. He shrugged. I spend a lot of time just walking the street by myself, or in meditation, or writing. I think we all want to get to the peace that comes from joy and lightness and effortless spontaneity. Deepak pointed out that many of us get caught up in our own formulations of what is right and wrong, but one person's wonderful experience may not be another's. Humans are paradoxical creatures and become sanctimonious and self-righteous about their version of what is good or lucky, he said. I told Deepak that I sometimes wished I had studied astrophysics so I could have a bigger view of the universe and all the elements that went into a lucky life. But he shook his head and told me that wasn't how I would find it. The latest model has 2 trillion galaxies, 700 sextillion stars, and trillions and trillions and trillions of planets. Earth would not be one grain of sand on all the seashores of this model, he said. And yet the experiences we have every day are all that we can hold on to. Deepak agreed that we make ourselves and the world luckier when we look for the positive and try to replace negative thoughts with more positive, constructive ones. He had written before that moods follow thoughts, and it doesn't help to indulge your gloom. Once you are sunk in anxiety, it's hard to lift yourself up. If you reinforce good moods, you have a better chance of creating flow, luck, and a sense of joy. When we left, I told Barnaby how much I had liked meeting Deepak. Effortlessly charismatic, he has made a lucky life by trying to help others understand the world better. And I could see why he had such a huge following. He was willing to think in ways that challenged our conventional wisdom. He seemed to be saying that with our thoughts and actions, we can shape our world and our own happiness, Barnaby said. And in that happiness is our lucky life, I suggested. Exactly, Barnaby agreed. You're in charge of your own actions and also your outlook. You determine whether you look at events through a positive or a negative lens. You get to decide whether the outcomes that arise from your interactions with the world are lucky or not. When I was in my early 20s, I met a man named Tom who was savvy and clever and incredibly hardworking. He'd had early successes and seemed destined for a huge career. Some years older than me, he was ending a marriage that had been wrong from the start and had left his huge home in suburban Maryland for a tiny studio apartment in Manhattan. When I visited one evening, he perched on the edge of the bed, there was no place else to sit, and mentioned that one of the closets in his suburban house was slightly bigger than his new apartment. "But I don't really need anything more than this," he said calmly. "Why would I? That big closet and big house didn't make me happy, and here I have everything I want. I feel very lucky." At the time, the comment left me slightly bewildered. Tom was one of the most driven people I knew, so surely he wanted more than a studio apartment. And yet he seemed serene and sincere as he looked around and announced his contentment. Only now did I understand his reflection in its true light as one of the secrets to making a lucky life. Tom had plenty of persistence and ambition and creative energy, but he implicitly understood that everyone makes mistakes and is subject to random fates, and he would never let either interfere with his optimistic spirit. Tom would find the positive in whatever he had and whatever he achieved. Perhaps more than anything else, the ability to find the good in any situation is the definition of what makes a lucky life. Tom and I stayed close friends over the years, and he let me know when he became one of the chief officers at a major investment bank. I joined him one day for lunch at his private dining room on the executive floor of the tall building where he worked. From our table for two, we looked out over a vast river view that included the Statue of Liberty. All of the world seemed literally and figuratively to be at his feet. "You've always been able to find the good, but now you don't have to look too hard," I said, gesturing toward the window. He gave a modest shrug. "Good and bad things happen in life, and you can't get too swayed by one or the other," he said. He mentioned that he had always been inspired by the Rudyard Kipling poem about keeping your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. I nodded, since he had quoted his favorite lines from that poem to me many times over the years. "If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same," I recited. He looked surprised and then laughed. "I guess I've been saying that for a while. But it is very important to treat triumph and disaster the same. You do your best to make luck in life, but whatever happens, all that's really in your control is your attitude." As if to test his theory, his wildly successful investment bank imploded a few years later. Tom was devastated. He wasn't sure of his next move and felt like he was wandering in the wilderness. But he eventually landed a top spot at another major financial institution. When I joined him for lunch there one day, the views from his new private dining room were even more spectacular. "You've landed well," I said, as a uniformed waiter glided in and out. Tom was as down to earth as always. "You already know my position on treating triumph and disaster the same," he said with a smile. Tom was a great lesson to me that whatever happens, you get to decide whether you see your life as lucky or not. He held the same philosophy, whether in a heavenly dining empyrean or an earthbound studio apartment. He coupled a positive attitude with focused ambition and then accepted whatever new challenges came his way. A few days after the conversation with Deepak Chopra, I was in a taxi cab on the way to the airport for a quick business trip. I usually have my head buried in my phone when I have spare moments, but I had been thinking so much about luck and noticing the world around me that I decided to put it away and just look out the window. There was no traffic at 7 a.m., and the taxi zipped along. The morning was chilly and the blue sky mostly hidden by thick gray clouds. But as I kept looking, I saw a halo of sun behind one of the clouds, lighting up a patch of sky, so it appeared like the image of a divine presence in an early Renaissance painting. A moment later, the sun burst free of the cloud entirely, and suddenly the narrow river we were passing lit up in a brilliant display of reflected sparkles. The shimmering light shot off in all directions. The scene was breathtaking, and then a cloud appeared again, and it was gone. As we continued to drive, the usually loud and ferocious New York City seemed quiet and vulnerable. Without the bustle of people and cars, the cityscape looked fragile, the bridges and buildings no sturdier than a child's playset. I had been lucky to see the sun's fireworks, lucky because I had looked. But I knew that random chance could change my day, too. A meteor could fall from the sky, the fragile bridge could fall. The lives we have all put so carefully together could be revealed to be built on sand and paste. There was nothing I could do about randomness other than to be prepared for it. Still looking out the window, I realized that we can't control everything in life, but we can control more than we think. We choose our opportunities, our outlook, and our general life pathways. At the end of the day, what is life except the people we love and the experiences we share with them? We build a lucky life through the joy we find for ourselves and others. We learn to treat triumph and disaster the same and make luck from whatever is in front of us. Luck is not a moment in time, but the lifetime of moments we make. I didn't create the sunshine on the water, but I allowed myself to look up and appreciate it. We can all keep finding more of that sunshine, and every time we do, we are making our luck. This is Janice Kaplan. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of How Luck Happens, using the new science of luck to transform life, love, and work. This program was directed by Mae Wuthrich, executive producer Karen Jakonski. Text copyright 2018 by Janice Kaplan and Barnaby Marsh. Production copyright 2018, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.